Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code AndySgirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. with code Andy's Girls for 10% off today. And thank the Jill Zarin and your life and mine. My Garden of Zen is watching TV in my den.
I don't need to RSVP. You know I always show up.
And showing up she is.
guys, it's Andy's Girls 275. Nothing I love more than a repeat guest to the People's People's Couch, because it feels like that first episode is us getting to know each other, you know, like starting to play the dance, and now we're in like jazz tap ballet advanced.
Exactly.
This next. And from my understanding of dance, it's just how it goes. You do one class and then you're a professional,
yep.
I think, mm-hmm. is what I've heard. So I'm so excited to have back someone whose book is literally on, I don't know if you can see it, I'm recording in my office. It's actually to the left of the Manolo celebrating mm-hmm. 50th anniversary. And I love to look at it. It's an awesome read. You know her as author of The Art of Showing Up, How to Be There for Yourself and Your People, and also senior editor at Vox. Welcome back to Andy's Girls, Rachel Miller. Rachel Miller, how are you?
I'm pretty good, all things considered. I can't complain.
I love a pretty good, all things considered. Can't complain. Can I ask you, you know, the name of your book is How to Be There for Yourself and Your People. Mm-hmm. How are you being there for yourself right now? It's kind of a scary moment for all of us, mm-hmm. reading the news or staying away. Are there some elements that you have found just helpful and soothing for yourself?
Yeah. So let's see. I'm actually off of work right now, which is a great place to start. I'm taking the rest of the week off, and then we have next week off. So I'm taking and I'm going to have a nice long break, which is like ideal. Like that's the best thing in the world, right? So yesterday we cleaned our whole apartment because I feel like that's, for me, like having a nice clean space to start from is a really good starting point. And also I felt like if I put it off, it would be hanging over my head all week. So we did a big deep clean. We're going to put up some more Christmas decorations today. And yeah, other than that, just kind of adjusting plans given the news about the variant and case numbers being so high in New York. We're like, you know, we had some museum plans this week we're canceling, but we're replacing it with some outdoor activities. So just trying to stay nimble and like find things to do to get out and feel like we're enjoying the city without putting ourselves and other people at risk.
Without being Gawker Stalker, mm-hmm. also known, I guess, as Jimois, can you tell me a little bit about what your outdoor plans are? Because that could be inspirational. It could be something that could be of interest to somebody listening.
Yeah, definitely. Myself. That's a great point. So let's see. We are going to go to the Union Square Christmas Market, which is always a good time. Didn't go last year, so I'm really excited about that. We are going to take a drive out to Diker Heights. Have you ever been there for the Christmas lights? Okay.
No.
It is wild. It's like basically a neighborhood in Brooklyn where people get so into Christmas lights. And I went a few years ago and it's like beyond what you can imagine. It's, and like, I want to be clear that the lights don't all look good. Like,
it's, oh yeah, even better.
It's
better
like a more is more approach. And it's not just lights. It's like, there's one house that had like 40 nutcrackers, like life-size human nutcrackers on their lawn. And like Santa's on the facade, like of every shape, size, and like all lit up. This house considers itself like on the front lines of the war on Christmas, defending Christmas. Like it is wild, and it's like so garish and perfect. So I'm looking forward to that. Definitely worth it.
And did you say you were driving out, or are you training?
Yeah.
And then can you walk? If for you, people who don't drive, is that something that people can like walk the street?
Totally. It's like the first time I went, we took the subway out there. I think you take the R like kind of all the way to the end. But this year we're going to drive and then like park and walk. It's very much like you just do it on foot. It's this one neighborhood. I don't know how busy it'll be this year, but the year I was there, it was just like crowds of people were like, it's just a known thing that people go just walk on the sidewalks to see it. So we're doing that. We're going to do some outdoor dining at places in our neighborhood that feel like that have sort of like the setups where you're not breathing onto the table next to you. So we're going to try that. I'm trying to think of what else I might be missing. The Brooklyn Botanical Garden is doing this lightscape thing, which I'm not totally sure what it is, but it's basically like lots of beautiful lights outdoors. So we got tickets for that too. So those tickets are like from 4:30 p.m. I think till 8:30 p.m. every day, so you can go and like have a nice family-friendly outdoor beautiful lights experience.
Oh my God. You know what? I have to tell you, I'm a, you know, Shalom Jew, but I fucking love Christmas lights. So
they're beautiful.
I'm so glad you shared these recs, because The Brooklyn idea sounds amazing. And also, I love the Brooklyn Botanical Garden. So for anybody in New York who's looking for ideas, you know, if you have a local botanical garden or any kind of outdoor space, check in, because they might be doing something special for the holidays. And also, there's typically time where discount mm-hmm. where tickets are discounted or mm-hmm. free admission, which I, you know, always highly recommend if that matches up with people's schedules. But that sounds like a delightful way to spend your holiday. My God.
Thank you. I think it's going to be good. And then we're going to balance that out with like cozy time at home, making cookies, like knitting, mm-hmm. taking it really easy. But I wanted to have enough like getting out of the house things to do that it feels like we're, I don't know, New York City in the winter in December is very special. So I want to like get a little bit of that, even though it's not the best year.
Oh, yeah. For anybody who's looking for an idea, I know it's an obvious one, but the windows at Bergdorf this year are extraordinary. I put some on my IG when I went last weekend, and just going there at night, and it didn't feel too crowded. It also happened to be a rainy evening, but it's just a nice way to feel like you're in the spirit. And, you know, I just have to say shout out to anybody who is the caregiver of their family, anyone with kids right now or taking care of whomever, including most importantly yourself. I honestly, genuinely cannot imagine how difficult and challenging that is, balancing everything and also wanting to make sure that your children or loved ones are experiencing a holiday that feels like one, that feels special. And so I just want to say shout out, and also highly recommend your book, because could it be a better time to do some internal searching? Also because the options are so limited. So like, hey, why not think to a bit of like, maybe I can make my life a little bit kinder.
Totally. You know? Why don't I control the one thing I can, which is like my goals and myself is how it feels sometimes. But I completely agree. I really, really feel for parents, any caregivers, but especially parents of small children. It's really, really bleak. And it just is, I don't know. I just feel so sad for everyone who's dealing with this in a far worse position than I am.
When it comes to the idea of lack of control, I think that's something that so many of us are feeling right now, which is like just the idea that the concern and fear. I know you wrote a piece recently for Vox about like what to do essentially if you're diagnosed, you know, your own experiences, seemingly small, granular, simple steps rather that people can take, because I always think preparation helps ease anxiety.
Completely.
Is there anything that you've kind of learned just going through your own experience with the COVID, which you've talked about on social and just kind of, you know, getting through the day, things not only that make you happy and make you smile, but also really just as importantly made you feel a little bit more secure?
Yeah, definitely. So last winter, or like probably last fall, I wrote a piece that was like, you know, if you're dreading winter, here's how to prepare for it. And one of the things that I wrote about was like, stock your medicine chest, like get everything you might need in case you get sick. I took my own advice, and then a few months later was really, really glad that I had. And so this piece that I wrote last week was kind of inspired by that, which is like everybody's freaking out right now and feels really scared. And one way to respond to that is like read every single bit of news you can find and panic. But another thing you can do is just like trust that, you know, you can check the news once a day and that'll be enough. And in the meantime, again, check your medicine chest. Do you need everything that you're going to need if you get sick? You know, we're talking about caregivers and parents. Like, what is your plan for isolation? Should you need to? Like, this article kind of outlines all the things that you can do. But aside from the sort of practical of like, do you have cold and cough medicine? I think it's really important to know where you can get tested, where you can get rapid test results. Because when you think you might have COVID, like you want those results really quickly. Mm-hmm. So like, I didn't do any of that ahead of time because I like getting tested when I had COVID was the first time I had ever been tested because we were so locked down last year. And so I really wished that I had figured out not only where to go, but where I could go for a rapid result because it was all new to me. So figuring out those kinds of things. And then I think the other thing is that people are getting a little lax. If they're vaccinated, they might be thinking like, oh, I don't know that I have to isolate for 10 days or like probably fine if I feel better. And like, that's just not what they're saying right now. So I think it's really important to mentally prepare for a 10-day isolation and like get everything you're going to need for that, whether that's like having some extra like mac and cheese in your pantry or figuring out what you're going to do with your dog. That was one of the things I also wished I had figured out in advance last year, of like, oh, I can't leave. Somebody has to come safely pick up my dog for 10 days. And like that was a whole bit of stress that you don't need. So I think really thinking that through. And then if you do get diagnosed, know that rest makes a massive difference in how you feel. And like, so for me, I was like, I'm taking the time off work. I have a mild case. It's, I don't know, like, isn't that enough? I was like, I'm going to, you know, lounge around. And it's like, you can't just treat it like a weekend where, you know, you're going to do some little chores here and there and you're going to read. Like, you really have to rest. And it wasn't until the sort of end of my bout with COVID that I read about post-COVID fatigue and like really fully understood from this really gentle UK-based website that recommends not doing too many thinking activities, which can include like checking your emails or making a shopping list. And I really am just so like, as I'm seeing more people get sick, I'm just like, you gotta like log off and relax, because it's not like, it's not a normal day off. It's a true sick day. And that really makes a massive difference in how quickly you heal and how soon you'll start to feel better.
So really, like, logging off does make a substantial difference in your physical recovery. That's
completely
so
interesting. Yeah. And I went back to work after 2 weeks because I had in my head like, this lasts for 2 weeks. And so I didn't really think, am I ready to go back to work? And after the first couple days at work, it was like, I feel physically exhausted and like winded from just working. And that's never like that. I'm not used to that experience. And so I think like once I made the connection of like, oh, it's rest, like doctor prescribed rest is not at all how I had been thinking about it. And it was a really big shift. And I think especially as like, you know, I wasn't vaccinated when I got sick. But now that people are vaccinated, I think there's this both desire and tendency to treat it as like a mild cold and it's going to be fine. And it's like, it should be, it might be, but like, I don't get ahead of yourself. Don't spike the ball before you're in the end zone, because I found myself of like, I feel a little bit good, I'll do chores. And then immediately the next day it was like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. You know, so like it just, I think seeing those things as really tied together and taking it a lot slower than you think you need to will really pay off. If you can, obviously, like not everyone can, but whatever you like think you can do, do 50% less than that.
Well, there is also the idea of, and first off, that's great, great advice and great counsel. There's the idea that so many of us have of like, we should push through. We're rewarded when we push through. We're better workers, better people, always working if we do that. And what we're learning now is, which maybe we can apply. And again, it's like, can you afford it? This is like a whole other conversation of like, there are many people who cannot, which is a crisis of another kind.
Right.
But, you know, the idea of saying like you deserve to, it doesn't make you a better worker or person to not give yourself true rest, which so many of us, myself included, I was as an event consultant, you don't get to have a sick day when you're like in production and in charge of 50 people. You're, you know, seen in that space. So the idea that this kind of forces us to listen to our bodies in a way that we didn't necessarily, or rather we're kind of rewarded for not doing. It's, there's a little bit of a like, okay, I need to recalibrate. It's not actually that, it's not that easy. It's tough. It has to be an active choice.
I think that's right. And I think that I was grateful that I had a couple friends checking in who were like encouraging me to do less and really kept saying, don't push it, don't push it. And that was helpful. So if you know somebody who gets COVID, I like recommend being that friend and really reminding them to slow down, because it's so difficult. And I think it's also like, no one wants to be sick. No one wants to have the thing we've all been afraid of for 2 years. So I think there's also an element of like, well, if I can get up and do some chores, then maybe I'm doing fine and I'm doing better. And that optimism and hope can push you to overdo it. And it's like, I get it. I did the same thing. But I think it's just, I don't know. If you're sick, it's like, you've got the thing we've all been avoiding for 2 years. You got it. Like, you've got to write it out. Like, I can't think of many better reasons to not be working than the thing that is, you know, causing the entire world to shut down. So just don't overdo it and let yourself heal.
Yeah. And the other element of this is, especially, and we'll, you know, talk a little bit about housewives, but the variant is so highly contagious.
Yes.
And I just want to recommend to people and stress to people as much as you can, get vaccinated, get your booster. And if you test positive for COVID or a loved one does, try as best, which, and this has been a struggle for a lot of people, try as best you can to remove the idea of shame from
100%.
It. You know, like, it's really tough to, I haven't been, you know, knock on mirror desk in the clovis. I have to use that whole sentence. but try as best you can to remove the element of shame and introduce an idea of grace, because mm-hmm. a lot of this stuff is out of our hands.
Completely.
It's why you want to feel hopefully a sense of responsibility for yourself and people who surround you, loved ones or strangers, but also it might just happen. So,
yep.
you know, prepare as best you can and also try to be kind to yourself. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, if we're thinking about it as the holiday season, just start by introducing the idea of kindness and grace to yourself first. And if this happens, you know, we're sending our love to you. We hope that you, everyone is staying safe and healthy this holiday season. And if you test positive, take the steps that Rachel is recommending. And also know that if you or someone else tests positive, it might just happen despite all of the, you know, this might just happen. You didn't do anything wrong. Just focus on getting better. No one is here or should be here to shame you. We should all just take a moment to say, like, you know what, that the exertion of the shame energy, we just maybe don't have capacity for right now.
I think that's so true. The epidemiologist that I interviewed last week actually was saying, we talked a little bit about this, and she said the most important thing is to not let that shame or feeling of guilt push you from doing the things that you need to do to protect other people going forward. So, like, you have to isolate. You have to tell the people who you've had contact with that you have tested positive. And, like, if the health department calls you, pick up the phone, give them your contact information. Like, it's okay to have gotten sick. It happens. It's out of our control in so many ways. But the important thing is, like, what you do next, and taking care of yourself is helping other people, but also sometimes it's literally letting people know so that they can stay home, so that they can get tested. So I totally understand the desire to, like, pretend this isn't happening and, you know, to feel just terrible about it. But I think remembering that once you get sick, you have a responsibility, and staying home and isolating is a way of honoring the responsibility we have to other people is really important.
Absolutely. And just as important is rewatching New York 7 through 11. And I might even throw in aspects of 12 in there, because you guys, I just recently rewatched it and there is so much quality content. I did it out of order because I like to introduce chaos into my own life. I can't strongly recommend it enough.
Wait, did you know that that's what I did when I had COVID? Is that specifically?
Wait, those seasons specifically?
Those seasons specifically.
I feel like we talked about you watching something, but I didn't.
I don't think we've ever talked about this before, because I was on, the last time I was on was well before this.
Oh, just kidding. Wait, you did 7 through 12, 8 through 12? What'd you do?
It may have been 6, but it was like we had been watching, but I think it was like 7 through the end of the series.
Wow.
Like, we got through, I think it was like 7 through whatever.
13.
Well, 13 wasn't out yet, so I think it was 7 through 12.
Wow.
Yeah, that was one of the only things I did when I had COVID, when I was finally like, I have to rest. I watched that, and then I watched The Sopranos, and then was like, well, this is like a perfect, this is New York. This is my New York. But I was also like, there came a point where I was like, The Sopranos is like too much of a thinking task. It's like too intense. So, like, back to Housewives it is, even though I kind of hate these women. This is what I'm doing.
I mean, I have to say, it's another kind of conversation, but I forgot how much value Ramona brought to the franchise at that. It's so easy to overlook or rewrite or critique the value that someone brought in these seasons because of whatever they've done since, or if I, you know, personally think they're a piece of shit. And so I'm watching this stuff and I'm like, wow, it's like honestly a little refreshing, and to see the Bethany return stuff, and she's,
I know,
super fucking complicated, especially season 7. How did you find, you know, there's the idea of like resting, right? If you have COVID or you don't, or you just need to take that break, but we're mixing in a little bit of like mega chaotic energy.
It's true.
How did that impact you? Because those are kind of chaotic, very spirited seasons. How did you pace yourself?
I think we watched it at a much different like energy level than normal. So normally it's like constantly pausing to sort of analyze what's happening. And I don't think we did that quite as much. I think it was just like a lot of, because it was my girlfriend and I were sick together. And I think it was a lot of just like periodically just muttering, I hate these women. And then like letting it rock, like keep watching though. Like just, we didn't do as much real-time analysis as we normally would do. So I think that also meant we just were like really just taking it all in. We're just, because again, that's what resting was. It was being glued to this and not doing anything else. And that meant I had the full experience of their behavior without the sort of like outlet of the analysis. But there's a chance I would have healed much faster had I not watched Real Housewives of New York.
<That's terrible. laughs>
Impossible to say.
I mean, who can say? But, you know, when it comes to the idea of like, what kind of watch are you watching Housewives for? There's the idea of like, I watch for the escapism. The idea of like, I truly love these women. The idea of, I love how complicated they are. For some seasons and some franchises, for many people, it could be a genuine hate watch. I do not like these women, but the TV content is great. You mentioned that it was a little bit of a hate watch. Is that how you felt about New York generally, or those seasons? What kind of experience do you think of yourself having when you're watching Housewives?
That's a good question. You know, I don't actually, I wouldn't call it hate watching, because like when I say I hate these women, it's sort of like, I whenever I find myself saying that, it's like, it's having one of those moments of like, oh my God, these women are doing the same thing that we're used to. Or, so I don't think we've talked about this. Maybe we have, but New York is so weirdly homoerotic in this way that I don't feel like anyone talks about. Whereas like, I'm ready to like write a PhD or get my PhD in this topic. Yeah. Watch it. The next time you're watching it, watch it through the lens of like, these women behave like frat boys behave, where they're like sort of constantly being like no homo while like grabbing each other's asses. The way they talk to each other and the way they touch each other is so bizarre to me as a queer person. I'm just there. It's like, do they realize like how they sound and what they're doing while also being like weirdly homophobic? So sometimes the I hate these women is just coming from being like, does Sonia realize what she's saying and doing? And she's like the most, like, she's, I mean, and what was it, what recent season is she saying she's gender liquid? Like, that's me when I'm like, I hate these women. Because it's so ridiculous and there's sort of no one there to just be like, hey, what's going on, you know? So it's a lot of that, but yeah, watch it through that lens. Sonia and Bethany, like, she's and like, just it's very interesting. I feel in my heart of hearts that Luann and Sonia is like the great love story of our time.
Do you?
I feel like they should grow old together. There's a season.
Shut up.
In like season 8, maybe, or maybe it's a little earlier, where they have this like beautiful dinner like on the west side of the city, or maybe it's the east side, but they're like on the river and they're talking about like how happy they are for each other, of like, you know, I'm so proud of you, you've come so far. But there's this weird, it has the tone of exes. It's like this, it's very, very, like, I just, it's an ongoing thing I've noticed. And in the most recent season, Sonia's getting super jealous of Garth, and everyone's noticing that she's really jealous. And she keeps saying things like, I just don't like, you know, when you have a boyfriend, and everyone's like, yeah, she's jealous. And I'm like, I don't know if she's jealous for the reasons they like quite think she is. Like, it just is, there's something unexplored happening there to my, like, as that's how I'm watching it a lot of the times. And actually the last time I was watching, I started like filming on my phone every time something ridiculously homoerotic happened, and it was just like constant, like we were constantly pausing because there's all these like, they're just always like talking about each other's bodies and like being like, you look hot, I'd fuck you. And it's just like, I guess it's a thing you can say to your straight people say to their friends, but like, huh, it's just interesting.
Oh, first off, oh my, if you guys saw how I immediately sat up, I was like, where are we going? I'm super into it. There are elements, you know, watching the Bethany Carol meet cute friend flirt and then absolute warring, like War of the Roses style moment. There are moments that are somewhat obvious. Carol saying, I had a sex dream about you.
Right.
But I think it's because I want to, what, like, relieve your, what was the,
I can't
she, like,
remember.
Wants her to, like, not like open up, but it was like some sort of like relieve something or make you relax or something. Mm-hmm. But there was like a little bit of some sort of undertone here of something that's certainly interesting.
It's interesting.
Sonia calls it gender liquidity because Sonia's not great at words.
Right.
But like there could also just be an understanding and comfort with the spectrum of sexuality.
Right.
Like these women maybe finding each other attractive.
Right.
Or you know, I don't want to say anything that can come off as in any way dismissive, but it is a really fascinating sort of tone that's in play in New York and not in other franchises.
Yes, that's exactly it. It's just very different than the other franchises. And it's this weird, like, so they had the season with Barbara as the friend of, who was mm-hmm. openly bisexual, and they were all very mm-hmm. weird to her. And there's like rumors
Super
about why she
weird.
Wasn't made a full-time cast member that was like maybe had to do with somebody like being weirdly homophobic. It's unclear what really happened there. I was like deep on a Reddit rabbit hole about that. So that's unclear, but it was interesting to watch these women who are constantly like, you know, getting naked together and like grabbing at each other and like talking mm-hmm. about how hot they look. Then when somebody's like, yeah, I've dated women, and they're just like, oh my God, did you like touch her vagina? And she's just like, yeah, like that's what you do when you're like, she was just like, obviously. And they were sort of like so scandalized by it and so weird about it. But then like when they're not dealing with an actual queer person, they're like very comfortable talking about it. It was just like a really strange mm-hmm. sort of contrast. So I don't know what's going on there. Again, like, I don't think that like anyone's super conscious of it. I think Sonia is increasingly kind of like she's had to kind of answer for it, because in one of the seasons she ends up like kissing a woman in like a club yep. scene at somebody's birthday. And so she kind of, but even at the reunions, Andy's like, what's going on there? And she's just like, I love everybody. And it's like, yeah, like that's one way of putting it. But like, what's going on there? Like, unpack that. You know, obviously no one needs to like, you know, take a label or come out if they're not ready to. But it's just, it's interesting on a show when you're in the public eye and, you know, you're putting yourself out there and you're doing these things on camera, that there isn't like a bigger sort of, I don't know, reckoning or conversation about it.
It just also isn't present on other cities.
It's just not.
A different, like, New York feels, to use one of Sonia's words in a totally different context, fluid in that sense, mm-hmm. where like you are in an environment and a community where, and by community, I mean this group of quote unquote friends, a cast, as some would call it. But it just feels like a different, and is that comfort? Is it because so many of these women have known each other for over a decade at this point, and they have been able to share so many seemingly intimate ideas and circumstances with each other? Or is it just these are the group of women who feel and behave in a very specific way? I mean, I really don't have an answer for it.
I don't either, but I've paid attention to the other franchises too, and it just isn't, they just don't. Like, you'll see bits and pieces of it. They, like, I don't know. Sometimes, like, it's like these women are touchy feely in a way that, like, I certainly am not. And so I'm, like, often noticing, God, they, like, really love to, like, hug and also weirdly hump each other. But New York is, like, above and beyond in this way that it's, like, this doesn't feel like friendship. And it's, like, it can be hard to explain that, I think, a lot of times to straight people, because they're just, like, they're friends and friends can be touchy feely. And it's, like, that is mm-hmm. true. But I think that there's a different level of intimacy and, I don't, it just always reads as different to me. And it's like, mm-hmm. once you start noticing it, you see a lot more of it with this franchise in particular.
And it's so interesting when there are people who join the franchise who are so different than the kind of circumstance that Sonia or Ramona are even expressing, like a Carol who's mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, cool. Like, if you're crying, can you just, there's like a
right.
glass wall between us. I don't like hugging. I don't. And yet she is the person who expressed the fact that she had a dream about Bethany.
Right.
So it's like the idea of people and how your guttural reaction might be, oh, I don't like touching, and yet I'm comfortable communicating something that is much more intimate
right.
than giving someone a hug, I would argue. It shows the many ideas and aspects of ourselves that sometimes we're able to express and sometimes we're not.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think when you assume that you're straight, or when you identify as straight, I think that sometimes you don't realize the things that you're saying or doing that are at odds with that. And that, like, I think things can go unexamined because you're like, well, I'm straight and I do these things, therefore these things are straight. And I think especially what like women who are, you know, in their 40s, 50s, 60s, like may just have like not had as much exposure to queer people or like, you know, like it just wasn't like a dominant, I mean, even when I was younger, it like wasn't as common. Representation was different. So I don't even know if like when Carol's sharing she had a sex dream with her about her friend, mm-hmm. like I don't know if she's fully thinking about why she's doing it, or she's thinking like, well, obviously I'm not gay, so it's not weird that I had this sex dream. And it's like, again, like I'm not saying that Carol is gay by any means, but it's just like when you have the, when you start from the place of like, well, I'm straight, so everything I do is like a friend thing or non-sexual, I think it like allows things to go unexamined that are like worth examining, because you might discover a new aspect of yourself that is like actually really good and that you want to explore more. So it kind of bums me out that they just sort of are not necessarily exploring this on a deeper level, at least as far as we know. Who knows what they're doing in their free time?
I'm so intrigued by this. And it's also the difference between like representation and expression, mm-hmm. and yet the connection between the two, because so often we get into representation, and you and I have discussed respectability mm-hmm. politics and that idea, the idea of the pressure on someone. And yet there's also the pressure in another way of how to, and yet still connected, how to communicate that you feel like the actual idea of your expression is representative of your identity or how others view you. And mm-hmm. I think Housewives does such an interesting job of like pulling that apart, but also upholding a lot of those standards,
yeah.
like reinforcing things that aren't that great,
yes, totally.
You know, or just unfair. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you guys, I've got a Housewives style confessional for you. I am not great at going to the grocery store. Even if I have a list, even if I have an itemized, organized list, I walk into the grocery store, I get nervous, I get anxious, and I have literally left without buying anything before, which is why I am so thankful for Green Chef. It makes cooking easy, so I can spend a little bit less time stressing and more time enjoying delicious home-cooked meals. Now, as many of you know, I have a variety of dietary restrictions because of an underlying health condition. I am gluten-free, vegetarian by choice, dairy-free, soy-free, refined sugar-free, but hopefully not fun-free, which is where Green Chef comes in. They have options for every lifestyle, including keto, paleo, vegan, vegetarian, fast and fit, Mediterranean, and gluten-free. And for those of us who check off more than one of those boxes, that is why I love Green Chef. Imagine living a kind of life where, for, you know, reasons having to do with a medical diet, you feel like there aren't a lot of options available, let alone delicious organic ones. I go to Green Chef, I look through their menus, and to my delight, see more than one option to choose from. All of them delicious and yummy. I have to tell you, NBD, no big deal, but I have a blackened cauliflower bowl en route to me with dirty rice, charred corn, salsa, paprika, Dijon aioli, and pecans. And guess what, guys? It's vegan, it's gluten-free, and it sounds absolutely delicious. Green Chef, America's number one meal kit for eating well with dinners that work for you, aka me, and not the other way around. And listen, guys. Listen, this is Andy's Girls. You think I'm not going to share a little deal with my beloved AGs? Go to greenchef.com/AndysGirls10 and use code AndysGirls10 to get 10 free meals, including free shipping. That's right. Go to greenchef.com/AndysGirls10 and use code AndysGirls10 to get 10 free meals, including free shipping. It's the number one meal kit for eating well. And you guys, you know what? I'm going to be eating well tonight. Join me and Green Chef. My God, I feel like this is going to be a little bit of a left turn, a little bit of a shift. But I do want to get your thoughts on Salt Lake City.
Okay.
Because it was a 900-hour episode. It took me literal weeks to get through.
Yes.
Not because it wasn't great. I thought it was great, except I just honestly was, I don't know what wasn't clicking in my head, but I was, I felt out of body. I was confused. It's just not a critique. I actually genuinely love the episode. I just was like, can someone explain to me what is happening with some of this? I wanted to get your thoughts on it. What an ep.
I felt the same way. I felt so, well, I didn't know when I started it because I watched it today. I didn't know it was going to be like an extra long episode and that this final scene in the Zen garden was going to be, I mean, of course it was going to be chaotic, but it was so chaotic. And I think what was happening was like there were multiple fights going on at once and it was very unclear of like who was mad at who for what. And at first I thought it was because I was not watching closely enough. So I like rewatched it and I read a recap and I still don't totally understand. I don't really understand what Lisa was mad about or like what exactly Mary did wrong or who's, again, I'm like, who's mad at who and why is kind of where I think we're all mad at each other and it kind of doesn't matter. But I did feel like it didn't really have a concrete takeaway for next week. And I reading a recap didn't totally help either.
Yeah, the Lisa stuff is confusing because I wonder how much of it is like a guttural redirect of like, I did participate in this, but I didn't, but I'm continuing to, but I'm not. And then how much of that connects with Meredith. But I do also think like sort of sidebar, separate conversation. How does friendship and support work if someone has maybe done something bad? Like, what does being a good friend mean if you're looking at that person as a sign of friendship or just like the idea of being a friend to society?
Right.
Does any of that make sense?
It does. I think this is a great question. I think it was even more interesting in a lot of ways on Beverly Hills because I think that the friendships are like more established and they are I think more of them are actually like friends or at least aligned than they are. Salt Lake is just kind of like loosey-goosey in a lot of ways. But I think it's interesting how like on Beverly Hills, the idea was like a true friend would simply never question any of these things and won't even ask you about it and will like take everything you say as fact. I mean, it's obviously really hard to process when somebody that you're close to has gone is being accused of really terrible things. But it was so frustrating on Beverly Hills the way that they would – it was so difficult for them to have direct conversations about it, but then they turned around and kind of did a lot of gossiping. And to me, that's not a true friend to that. But then turning around and like, you know, you're in person and you're walking it back immediately. I think that like a true friend is kind, but is ultimately having a conversation with you that they're having in private. Like if not like in tone exactly the same way, like those things are on a continuum versus being really two-faced. And, you know, it's tough when you kind of maybe believe the allegations, but it's also not clear if they do. It seems like they're trying to bury their heads in the sand a little bit. And so I found when Lisa and Jen go to lunch and Lisa's saying to, she's really stumbling over it too. She's really not giving her like a full throated, you know, defense or validation. She just says to me, you know, you're innocent until, and it's like, you want to say you're innocent until proven guilty. And I turned to my girlfriend. I was like, that's a really weird thing to say to your friend. Like, you're your friend. I don't know, to say like, to me, innocent until proven guilty is like what you say, like maybe publicly why you're supporting somebody. But to say to somebody's face, like, well, until the court convicts you, I don't know. That just really struck me as odd and like impersonal on a level of like, but like, what do you actually think? And do you not want to ask her any questions? Are you not? Obviously you're curious. Are you just choosing not to? That's how it felt on Beverly Hills. Like they didn't really want to know. I don't know. I can't get a read on Salt Lake City what they actually think about the crimes or the alleged crimes.
Well, I feel like in both franchises, there is some sort of understanding that to be uninformed is the greatest form of loyalty.
Yeah.
Like that is, it is seemingly more obviously projected by Erica Jane, I think, than Jen Shaw. And I think it's probably closer to what Mary is looking for, which is like the idea that you avoid this entirely. But there is also the aspect, which is so interesting, which you're getting to with Lisa, that I also see with Heather Gay, which is the idea of like, I'm not going to be your judge and jury.
Right.
But what are you supposed to be?
Right.
Like, what does that mean to be a judge and jury? Versus being a why do you have to leave your personhood at the door in order to support your friend?
Right.
I don't understand it. I don't know if that's too much of a maybe projection on my, I don't think it's a projection, but maybe my, the idea of friendship standards that I have are not realistic in these circumstances. Right. But like, what does that mean? What's the translation of
that? And it also feels like you've got to be running this through the lens of what you know about the person. Like, that's a natural thing to do. And it's why Meredith is just kind of like, okay, well, told you she sucks. Like, I believe, you know, it's pretty clear that Meredith thinks this very well could be true and is not interested in hearing otherwise and like kind of doesn't care. And like, that's an easier position to take when you don't like somebody. But with these different friendships, you have a sense of how this person is. And I don't know that Heather is really saying like, this can't possibly be true. I didn't get the sense that at this point she thinks that. And so
1000%,
you know, I think in that case, if you think that this might be true, I can see why you're like, I'm not going to confront you about it on television and try to catch you in a lie on TV, because I think that's probably more likely what you would do to a friend is like have a real conversation about them and ask, why are they saying this and what have you done? Like, that, you know, you would have those conversations about like sort of the inconsistencies, which is what Sutton was kind of trying to do. But I can totally see why you wouldn't want to do that on TV. Like, that you don't want to like make a case against somebody in public if they are your friend. But I think you can have a lot of empathy for the American criminal justice system and the brutality of it and how unjust it is. And you can understand why somebody would be scared. And you can, you know, mm-hmm. I thought when Jen was talking about how they, you know, pulled out guns at her and like, which mm-hmm. as soon as that scene aired, I was like, this is fucking wild. Like, this sucks so much that her sons are being, you know, taken out of the house at gunpoint. Like, that is completely ridiculous for a fraud case. Like, what are we doing? And I think that, you know, Heather also seemed really sort of upset and moved by that. And I think that, like, as a friend, you can support your friend as a parent and you can feel really sad for their children and their family going through this. And you can express empathy in those ways and you can do what you can to support the, you know, the family who is maybe also hurt by this without explicitly condoning your friend's behavior or even, you know, supporting them specifically. But I do think that, like, with things, I don't know. I think if a friend of mine went to court, I would really think like, should I be in court? Not because I like support them, but because the prison system and the criminal justice system is so brutal and so isolating that like, I want to bear witness to this, even if I don't agree to them. It would be a hard decision, but I think that's the way to think through of like, you know, what would justice look like to me for, mm-hmm. you know, my friend and for these people? And how do I see their personhood in a really brutal system that like dehumanizes and removes people from their communities, you know, repeatedly? And so I think that that's a reasonable sort of way to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, all of these are really interesting, great points. And then I also think about the fact that Jen Shah, seemingly understandably so, when your, you know, main source of income is in question, which is the most generous way of putting it, immediately begins filming again.
I know.
And as a part of her filming is like, on the lives of my family and loved ones didn't do this. And in real time, we know that Stuart is seemingly planning to plead guilty. I know.
That was really hard to watch.
It's real tough to think about. All these things might be true. It is possible to show grace. It is possible to show empathy. It is possible to understand the deep inequity inherent in the criminal justice system. It's possible to understand the outrageousness of what her kids were put through because of her alleged actions. And yet also we're watching this woman attempt to either convince us of something or tell us this thing is so. And like, how do you process it if you start from a place of disbelief?
Right. I completely agree. And I wish there was a little bit more directness about, you know, I wish people could have the conversation of like, I am so shocked by this. It doesn't square with what I know about you, if that's how they're feeling, you know, but this sounds really bad. And like, how do you explain mm-hmm. this? And how, you know, I wish that they would ask more questions. Again, I can understand not wanting to do that on TV, but I am so curious if that conversation is happening at all, because that seems like the natural thing to do is to say, did you do this? Okay. If not, why do they think this? And like, And if what's true is that you've always kind of wondered about this, or you hired a private investigator because you thought somebody was stealing from you, like, that's the time to say, like, I want to support you, but I want to be honest that X, Y, and Z things, whether that's, you know, the state's evidence or your own personal experience, X, Y, and Z things are making that a little difficult, and give them a chance to respond mm-hmm. to it, I think is a maybe a fairer way to approach it.
Ay, ay, ay. And also, you know, we're watching that scene with Jen and Coach Shaw, and, you know, the moment of them praying, we cannot understate the importance of seeing that and the importance of seeing diverse stories being told. I wish the circumstances were a little bit better.
I know.
Because I think that seeing those moments presented in the fluid way, to continue using that word, that they were, mm-hmm. it felt like such an easy, the way that religion is being discussed on Salt Lake City is endlessly fascinating
totally.
To me. But there is that moment of like Jen talking to Coach Shaw, which was surprising to me. I want to know if it was for you, of the info that she is supporting her family by hiring them to work for her at a cost
right.
of like maybe $50,000 a month. How do you process that as a family member, knowing what we have now found out
right.
versus like literally what is my scope of work here?
Right. It's just like, it's super weird. It, you know what I mean? Like it's a weird thing, and it's unclear if it's like, you know, we have money and we're generous and they won't just accept it as a gift. So we're going to like let them quote unquote work for us so that they feel, mm-hmm. you know, like they're earning this support, which we would happily give them. That could totally be the case. It's just, is it like a weird like tax workaround that like if you're, you know, if you're giving money to them, you're not like, I don't know, it's you're treating them differently than you would other employees. Mm-hmm. Is your generosity rooted in the fact that you've been stealing money from old people? Like it's really unclear. And again, it puts them all in this really vulnerable position yet again of like, well, now what are we going to do when we're reliant on her? It's really upsetting to see somebody who has a family, even just her husband and kids who rely on her for, you know, both emotional and or financial support, to see like that could crumble, and it just makes them seem so vulnerable. And like when you find out there's other family members too, it's just like, what were you doing? This is really bad. If this is true, this is really bad and really upsetting.
Yeah, and there seems to be an understanding of it amongst the cast in some aspects, and an understanding amongst the cast of some aspects of what's being discussed about Mary. And the fraught part of this is the ways that some people are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to some cast members that they're not to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And the contradiction in the processing and sympathy is like a wild thing to unpack. What do you think about that idea and like the ways that Meredith, you know, can connect with Mary, who I just need to add, as I have many times in the past, has not been charged with any crime. It's a very different circumstance than like the entirety of the government showing
right,
up at
right.
Jen's house to check in and make sure she's okay.
Right.
I mean, like very different circumstances, but how do you unpack the kind of disparity in it all?
It's really strange. And I think it probably starts with Meredith doesn't like Jen and has nothing nice to say about Jen and does like Mary. The question for me is sort of like, what does Meredith see in Mary? And like, when did they mm-hmm. become so close that Meredith is sort of unwilling to hear any possibility of Mary doing something wrong? It kind of seems like Meredith is feeling guilty about things that happened last year, of like talking behind people's back, and is like, I'm not going to do that anymore. And I'm just going to like, you know, commit to trusting people. And I'm just like, maybe not right now, though. Maybe you should look into this more. It's a really interesting loyalty, because I don't get the sense that they're actually that good of friends. And I also, after watching how Mary talked to Whitney, I'm just like, how can you think this is like a good friend? Like, that was so cruel and unexpected and unnecessary. Like, did that not make you question a little bit what Mary's whole deal is, and make you think that like maybe she's not the friend that you thought she is? Like, nothing is making you think that.
Yeah. And yet in the trailer, everyone was like, Team Meredith. Oh my God. Yes, queen go off mm-hmm. in the ways that she was stepping up against Jen. And that's like, you know, the Wikipedia versus the long form. Mm-hmm. The long form, as we watch the series, is okay, you may still feel that way and, you know, good on you, but also there is a stranger circumstance at play here, because you can tout this person as the protector and defender of justice and of the, you know, downtrodden, and as the mama bear protecting her cub. And yet none of that seems to be a factor with Mary, who mm-hmm. hasn't necessarily done anything specific to your children or child. And I'm not taking out the idea that that may have lasted a couple years.
Right.
Like, it's not just like a tweet here and mm-hmm. there. There was some sort of something
yeah,
in the
that's
mix.
Right.
But like, your instinct was to protect and defend. And yet it's a little subverted when mm-hmm. it comes to Mary. And I can't figure it. It seems obvious why she's not defending Mary, because it's another way to dig at Jen. Mm-hmm. It's just like the execution of it
I know.
Is like
it's really weird.
Muddled at best.
It's sort of like she's just like, I've reached my limit on the number of people I can be upset with at once, which I totally get, because after watching this last episode, I was like, how can any of them keep track of who they're mad at this point and where mm-hmm. their loyalties are? And so I kind of feel like when one person in your friend group is being indicted, do you just declare like, I'm done for, like, that's it. I'm at capacity. I simply cannot take more fraud in this group. And like, I can't be responsible for learning more. If it comes out, I'll deal with it then. But like, I personally can't deal with it. That's sort of how it feels to me, like a denial of, because she's just like, my systems are overloaded and I simply can't take more in, especially not for somebody who I considered a friend. Jen, she didn't really consider a friend. She's not surprised, but Mary, she does. And so if Mary has done something wrong, then Meredith has to like do a little more soul searching.
Yeah. And speaking of soul searching, I don't know if it's that these women aren't paying attention or they feel extreme discomfort, but Mary's reactions to people and things are so fucking ugly.
They're really
and
ugly.
Like deeply
racist.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, are we gonna have the talk? Are we gonna have the talk? This is like the second week in a row.
Yeah.
And we saw the preview for next
yep.
week when Jenny's like, you literally cannot tell someone of Asian descent that their eyes are, and I'm sorry for using
yep.
the exact language, but I'm going to, slanted. Like, that is extremely ignorant and racist.
Yeah.
And like, we're all having conversations about like setting standard, who's the better friend, who talked less shit than Jen. It's mm-hmm. like, where are the people talking a little shit in the moment to Mary?
Right. I know. That moment last week when Mary made that mm-hmm. like completely unprompted and bizarre comment about Mexican people. And you watch Lisa hear it and like clench a little
yeah.
bit and then let it go. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, this is how it happens. People don't say anything. And it was really, really bad. And it also happened last season too. Like, Mary's got some stuff going on to unpack. I have a lot of sympathy for her. There's not a lot of Black people in Salt Lake City. Like, I get that. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, we talked about respectability politics last time I was on. We've seen that mm-hmm. shit from Mary. That's definitely something she's internalized. But it's also wild that it's just like the way she talks about other groups is fucked. It's and like no one's calling her on it.
Why don't you think that they are? What do you think is going on there? Because these are not women who seemingly stay quiet when they think that something is fucked. And yet there seems to be a little bit of a consistent record here that's pretty cringe.
I think that they're a bunch of white women, for starters. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so they feel uncomfortable correcting a Black woman and telling her, I understand why they're hesitant. And then I also think that these are not women who are like particularly well-versed in racism and like what, you know, the different aspects of it and what it can look like. And so I think that they don't feel confident in their ability to explain it, which I think is true for a lot of white people. They know something is wrong, but they're not sure that they can explain why. And like they don't trust themselves to do it. And, you know, I think the two things together, they're just not saying anything. And so it's going to be Jenny who says it versus anyone else at that table, which sucks.
And yet Salt Lake City is like one of those casts that I think gets it. I think that in the moment, if they were listening, they would get it. If Ramona was there, she would be like, oh my God, LOL. If some aspects of Jersey, you know, with the best of intentions, mm-hmm. they may or may not click.
Right.
I think the women, the other women, all of the other women at the table get it, which is what makes it so much more cringe.
Yeah, when they do nothing.
Because I do think they understand.
I think you're
Heather
right.
gets it.
Yeah.
I think that Meredith gets it.
I think
that Lisa definitely gets it. And that's where I'm like, oh, fuck, because you're not saying anything because you either, which I also understand because of the element of race that is at play here, I do understand the inclination to thinking you're going to compound an issue, make something worse, mm-hmm. Isolate the only Black full-time cast member, the only Black cast member on Salt Lake City. But the counter to that is like Jenny's also in her first season.
Right.
Where's the like concern about her experience on this show?
Yeah.
Because she's being left out on an island right here by herself, mm-hmm. which is incredibly frustrating because I do think these women could throw her some support.
I think that's right. I think that they're just really scared of Mary, and given the way that she reacts sometimes, I can see why. The way she treated Whitney, who is her only ally, who really Meredith is now too, but I think Whitney like considered Mary a true friend, and it's like, Mary, you don't have a lot of true friends on this show. Like, they don't really seem to like you very much. They think you're weird. They like Whitney genuinely cares for you, and the way that you're willing to just turn on her, I can totally understand why you're like, well, I don't want to get into it with this person who's like so nasty to their supposed friends. Like, what's she gonna do to me?
What does true friendship mean on Salt Lake? Like, who is true? I would think Lisa and Meredith were true friends, but now I'm like, oh shit, they might have been, but maybe not next week. Like, what
I know,
is that?
I know.
What does that even look like? Like, what's the standard? What's the foundation? What's the result?
I mean, I think Heather and Whitney, because they're cousins, have a true friendship.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's, I don't know. I actually find this is the case on a lot of reality shows like this, where there comes a point where you're just like, none of you are friends. And so it's harder to sort of explain away this conflict, because like in any normal circumstance, you guys just wouldn't hang out anymore. There isn't a true friendship. And so family connections do help make it make more sense, because it's like, I can't really totally cut this person off. But some, they're just so different. And you're like, yeah, you probably wouldn't really be friends anymore. But it seems like this season, like, I don't know if I would have said Jen and Lisa were true friends, but like they were, like Lisa was really, really loyal to Jen in a way that was bizarre even at the beginning of this season. And now that's sort of up in the air. It's unclear. It just doesn't seem like there's any really strong alliances or friendships like there are on other casts.
And the LOL about Heather and Whitney, and correct me if I'm wrong, is like they only recently discovered that they're related.
That's
it's
right.
Not like they grew up together having play dates. They were like out at a cocktail party and they're like, oh my God, are you a direct descendant? Oh, are you too? And yada yada. Oh my God, we're cousins. Like, it's not like, and yet they do have an obvious bond.
They do.
And have grown closer, maybe also through doing the show together.
I think that's probably right.
I mean, I
gotta say, Whitney is emerging as one of my favorite housewives.
Oh, tell me what that process has been like.
I just think she's so funny. And like, you know, there's certain times where you're just like, she says things and it's like, oh, you go to therapy and you've been going to therapy. Like, she really has like she processes things. She has a smart analysis. I see her like setting boundaries in real time and saying like, you can't talk to me like this. I think that her storyline with her dad is so interesting, with her, you know, her siblings and the way they talk about that. It's, I don't know. She brings like sort of real, she has real problems, and so she brings that real sort of, I don't know, real life experience and wisdom with it. I think Heather also has that sense of like, there's an authenticness here, or an authenticity here, because these are people who've had to deal with difficult things, and so there's a maturity. But I think Whitney's just funny. I think that like she's got a self-awareness. She like looks like she's going to be a blonde bimbo, and you know, she's got her sort of baby voice and her Utah accent, and then she just says the most insightful thing and you're just like, god damn, okay, Whitney. I think she's great.
And her confessional looks are always off.
I know.
It's always like we're at noon and you're at 2:15.
Yep.
And like we know you're going to get around to noon at some point. But like what season will that be on? And yet she's giving us so much quality stuff.
I know. I just find her delightful. She's so, I'm like, of all the people I would want to hang out with, she's up there because she seems like she's a really good time, but also seems smart.
Is there another housewife where you started off thinking that they were going to be a certain way and regardless of whether or not that panned out, just grew to feel such affection for them that was like a little bit of a surprise?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of who my favorites are. Dorinda is another favorite of mine. And I don't think she was a surprise. I think I just like my fondness for her just like deepened over the years. I'm trying to think of on Potomac. I don't think there were any big surprises. I think that Whitney's the biggest surprise.
You know, it's funny that you bring up Dorinda. And this is super unfair, but guys, I just rewatched 7 through 12, so bear with me on this. There are some moments of Mary's responses to things, taking out the deeply problematic, terrible, racist comparisons, alliterations, whatever you want to call them, taking that out, the way that she is sometimes just like mean as a reaction to feeling like she's under attack, as a reaction to feeling pain, as the ability to maybe unleash rage that doesn't come up in the healthiest places, I can't help but feel a little bit of a connection there to what is happening with Dorinda. Can't help but feel a little bit of something of what did happen to Dorinda, of her connective thread through New York, which was always there. I mean, do you see something or is it just I could truly just tell me to go fuck myself. You would be the 10th today.
I'm such a Dorinda fan, so it's hard for me to see that.
I get it.
Here's the thing, though. Mary appears to be sober all the time when she is this way, whereas I think that Dorinda should not drink. I think that we really tend to see this from her when she's drinking. So with Mary, I'm just like, not like, what's your excuse? Because like being drunk is not an excuse for being mean, but like sort of you're like, what is it like to just be like that all the time? Just be sort of so ready to lash out in that way. Because that's scarier to me, that it's not something that can be explained or stop. If you don't drink as much, this probably won't happen, which is not, again, like you still need to process that and like work through it, but that is a helpful thing to be able to connect it to. Whereas with Mary, it's just like you just go through life this way that you can kind of snap at any minute, and that seems really intense.
And is it, that's such a good point, is it when it comes to Mary, who is seen as a, depending on what you're hearing by members of her church, possibly a descendant of the messenger for God, or at best a not like spokesperson for her church, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the represented leadership of her church. What does it mean that that person who is in a spot where you would think, I don't know, best behavior, whatever you want to call it, comes on a show like this and on that show responds in the way that she does? How do you connect that to the spiritual leadership role that she has?
I wonder that, but I think if you see her as a spiritual leader, like you're going to be looking at this differently and you're going to be sort of maybe excusing away things that the rest of us would not, because it's not just that, actually, that would give me pause if she were my spiritual leader. It's like everything. Like she's just, she's very strange. The way she was like talking to her son about his girlfriend, like at the beginning of the season, was super weird. She's just, I don't know, like the story that she was telling about the member of her congregation who had the car accident, and she was just sort of glibly telling this. It was just, like all of it is like, I don't know how you respect this person as a spiritual leader and like as a spokesperson for God. Like my read of her is so far from that I like can't really, I can't imagine that the meanness would be the only thing. And I guess I'm kind of like, well, if you've accepted all those other things, then I think maybe you would accept this too and not question it. I don't know. I think there's something happening with like you know, true charisma, which is when you are like, you can sort of sell anything to and kind of like win people mm-hmm. over in a way that is sometimes like actually harmful. I think she's got some of that, whereas like the people who she has charmed are not going to see this, but the people who aren't charmed by it are just like, this is all bad, top to bottom.
Totally hear you there. And also, like, I watched a little bit of that. Do you watch the after shows? I forget if you
not
do.
Really.
So there are, the Salt Lake City after shows are 8 hours long. It's like a solid 33 minutes this week. I had time for like a hot 7 or 8. So I haven't watched the whole thing, but there are moments in which she's expressing herself to the producer and sharing her perspective that feel, I don't know how to, it feels like there is such an interesting nuance there where she's understanding what's going on in a way that we don't necessarily give her the benefit of the doubt during the show because she expresses all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And it's wild to watch her and watch her process what's happening because there are so many elements of it where I'm like, okay, you understand what happened here. Like, you understand on the after show, you're like, yeah, I totally said some shit about Jen mm-hmm. and like I didn't remember. And you know what? The shit that I said about Jen is probably the worst shit anybody said. You know, like, there's a way that she is digesting and unpacking what happened on the show that feels very clear. And yet I wonder on some of this other stuff, the way that she characterized Jenny, mm-hmm. the way that she has reacted to Whitney. Like, she gave a diagnosis of Heather and said, in a way, like, I wish that Heather saw herself the way that everyone else sees her. Mm-hmm. Like, she's very contemplative in some yes. in some senses, and yet her guttural reactions things are so, they're like superficial mm-hmm. in the worst possible way. It's like top layer problematic, you know, yeah. like I it's hard to try to understand her. She's so incredibly fucking complex.
I agree that there's often times where she says something. I think it's also quite often when it's like an instance involving other people that she's not involved in. And like, she reads the situation for exactly what it is. And you're like, oh my God, mm-hmm. that was exactly it. Like, it's a remarkable moment of clarity. But then she turns around and she says the wildest things and you're just like, what is the disconnect here that these are coming from the same person? Because there are so many different facets to her and some are really good. And that's where I can see why she would have a loyal congregation who really likes her, because there's times where I'm just like, I can't be mad. She's so silly and charming. But then increasingly, mm-hmm. I'm not feeling that way. Increasingly, I'm just like, this is not good. This is ugly.
And what do you think that in some ways she could understand either through the reaction? I don't know, like, how much she follows and connects with what is said about the show and her behavior on it online. I really don't know. But do you think that there's a chance that she'll have some sort of like breakthrough? Or is this just like, this is who you are, you know, just as there are really shitty aspects that are super problematic of other housewives, I don't think that this is like really gonna be the moment for you to grow from this. I think that this is just the mirror that's being held.
I think that's true.
In your closet.
I saw after the last week's episode, she released some kind of apology, which was like impossible to read because it had like 16 different bouncy fonts in it. And like, that was wild. But I don't really get the sense that she has a lot of friends. And, you know, not just on the show, but just like, how she seems, the way that her cousin was her maid for like, you know, and I'm pretty sure she referred to her as her maid, like she, as, you know, mm-hmm. my maid and assistant for, you know, 30 years or something like that. But like, she doesn't even know when her birthday is or something wild. And it's just like, oh, I don't know if you have anyone close to you who can hold up that mirror and who can say, hey, this is bad, this thing that you said. I'm like, maybe she has like somebody doing her social media who tried to explain this to her and like got her to allow this apology to be released, but I don't think she has anyone like sitting with her and saying like, hey, you've really gotta like rethink how you're thinking about this. I don't feel like she has that, like, I don't know, guidance, maybe from her husband, but like, I don't know, she just seems like a very lonely person.
I was gonna say, it's such a good way to describe it. I don't, again, this could be another shitty comparison, but there is some Kim Richards there of like a real lonely, some stuff has happened, some trauma has taken place, incredibly different circumstances, although in both cases the element of youth being present there. Mm-hmm. Kim obviously starting her journey much earlier as the provider for her family.
Right.
But we don't know what Mary experienced before this whole marriage mishigas through her first marriage or at any other point. Mm-hmm. So there is something there that's just, and maybe that explains her reactions to people too, because maybe she doesn't experience female friendship companionship in the same way that some of the others do. I don't know.
I mean, gosh, just in yesterday's episode, her saying, you know, I have a lot of stuff, but I haven't talked to my mother in 20 years. And so other people have family. I have things was like heartbreaking on like multiple levels and just in a really sort of wild way of explaining why you have so much stuff, like a really, you know, and it's just like it's hard to argue with somebody who's talking about a really devastating thing that happened. But it's also just like, man, that's sad. You like that's really sad if that's why if this is why you really have so many designer things, like what a bummer.
I mean, it is a gray, she says as she records from her closet. Mm. It is like a little bit of like this like not gray area, but it's like a little bit of a thing of. Speaking of things, the idea that something can bring you joy, it can bring you pleasure
totally.
In a number of ways. Mm-hmm. It can bring you delight. It is the way that you feel like you can express yourself. Mm-hmm. It can be an expression of identity and language to have certain things. And then there's also the idea of hoarding.
Yes.
Of like, I am over collecting because this is the only way that I now feel comfortable expressing myself. So instead of thinking about and really reflecting on the ways that I don't feel comfortable communicating or I haven't been able to, I'm going to like do it through dresses and nothing mm-hmm. else. I think that's maybe the position she finds herself in, which is why the idea of like having a someone in there to organize her closet mm-hmm. could genuinely be an interesting window into Mary in the expression of how she sees herself and the things that she's willing to let go and the things she absolutely refuses not to. But the idea of like, I am my stuff. This is who I am. This is also what brings me joy. I mean, literally, I could not love dresses and shoes. I love beautiful objects, sparkly things. I love like the idea of a reflection of who I am mm-hmm. in certain materials, in certain
totally.
Like I understand that. But I also think there is something else there. If that is the only expression, if that is the only language that you can communicate, mm-hmm. it's a tough spot to be in
yeah.
because it's never going to speak back.
No, it's not. And everything in there, particularly that other closet where it's like nobody's been in here in years. Like it just feels like nothing in there is getting used or loved as much as it should be if you really do just love this. And like she clearly likes putting outfits together. Like she does put together like very mm-hmm. fun and expressive and creative
eccentric.
Outfits. So like she
yeah.
does have that, but it does feel like when she says to the woman who's in there, take anything you want. And when she's giving stuff away to her friends constantly, there's a bit of a like, what are you, it's sort of like this break with her mother was specifically tied to her assuming this role in the church, and that led to mm-hmm. a lot of wealth. And so it feels a
right.
bit like, well, if I lost my whole family over this, I better have something to show for it. And like what I have to show for it is all these designer things. I'm a success, I made the right decision, but like you don't care, you're telling people to just take whatever they want. And I kind of think she meant that. Like I don't think she mm-hmm. cares about these things writ large. I think she loves certain things and has fun with it, but I don't think she would miss a lot of those things if they were gone.
I totally agree. And I also think like, I don't know why this phrase is like circulating in my head and it could be completely fucked, but like the idea of like money as her monologue of like, mm-hmm. this is it's just the language that she speaks. The idea that she brought all that shit to fucking Vail or wherever the hell they were. She wasn't intending to give people. She was literally like, okay, we might have similar size feet. Also, I brought this thing in a box because that's just how I pack my shit. But like, here's a $6,000 bag. Here's a $1,200 clutch. None of this was intended to be presented as a present. And yet it's the only tool that she has.
Right.
And the only way to either change the conversation or add to it.
Right.
And it the thing is, the shitty thing or whatever, the successful thing is it works. It does. Obviously works. But it's at like least in the short
so
term.
Strange when you stop and think about it, like to just give people your cast offs, but as gifts, like not in a way of like, hey, you guys, like I need to get rid of a bunch of stuff. Does anyone want to come and poke through? Or like you've always really liked this thing. I thought you might want to have it. Just like kind of foisting it on people, which also like there's a way of giving gifts that doesn't feel like a gift at all. And I don't know if that's how the receivers felt here, because I think they were just like, oh, my God, like a $5,000 bag. Like how generous. I don't know that they felt burdened by it. But like when somebody is giving you really expensive things, that can come with strings attached. That can be a burden later when you want to say, hey, I don't like the way you're acting. So I also wonder if they stopped and thought about how she acts and then for her to do this, like, how does it feel to just be given a pair of somebody else's shoes that are like really nice and expensive shoes, but like they just decided to give them to you one day on a trip at the last minute and then told you it was a gift, which it technically is, but it's not like a gift you chose for them specifically either. Mm-hmm. It's not like a birthday gift where it's like, oh, she got her a really generous gift for her birthday. It's like, it's a really generous gift that's like for no occasion, except that like, maybe she wants to change the vibe a little bit here. It's odd.
I mean, it's a bribe.
Yeah.
She was giving beautiful Chanel, Louis Vuitton, other design. Lubes. She was like, hey, I heard you guys were talking shit about me. Oh, you know what? Is it late at night? Here's the $6,500 bag, Heather. Happy day of the week. Like, it's a literal bribe, which we saw in Lisa's. In the understanding and the replay of Lisa's response to
right.
it, like fucking works. Bribes work.
It
guys.
Does, but they're not reading it that way. And I get it because they all got the bribes, but it's wild that like there's not even a moment of like discomfort or questioning with it. That like again, like I think if somebody I wasn't very close friends with was giving me a $5,000 bag, I would probably feel a little weird. Like, is it that she wants to, like, implicate them and, like, it's like, well, you accepted her $5,000 bag, so what can you say about, like, how her church makes money?
I mean, I haven't been in that circumstance yet, but, guys, if you want to put me in it, I would be willing to take one for the team. That's all that I have to say about that.
I feel like next time I listen to this, it's going to be, like, a totally different tone. Mary's great. No complaints about Mary. As you show off your new shoes.
Where did I get this solid gold chair?
Right.
It's made it's worth $8 million. I couldn't tell you, but you know who seems great?
Mary
M. Cosby. Who seems like the higher power that AG will bow to accordingly. Listen, if there is one prayer coming out of this week's episode of AG, it is that you need to be back like ASAP, I have to tell you. I absolutely find our conversations so interesting. I cannot get over the New York conversation that we just had. Guys, I couldn't more highly recommend getting your book, which is truly in a place of honor. This is like this little area of the cloth, which you guys haven't seen yet, but you will on social soon, is a little under construction, but you can see your book at the top shelf next to, by the way, who am I looking at? Next to Nora Ephron.
Wow. Okay.
No big deal.
Yeah.
My God, just a little, you know, up and coming author.
Right.
Can you tell the folks, give a little bit of an elevator pitch or rundown of what they can look forward to and expect in reading it and where they can buy it? Available for purchase now.
Definitely. It is available, you know, wherever you get books. There's an audiobook version. It is divided into two parts. So the first half is all about taking care of yourself, and then the second half is about taking care of other people. But there's a lot of overlap. Like a lot of the things are sort of the same idea, like, or the same ethos behind them. And let's see what else. I don't know. I'm really proud of it. It came out in May of 2020, and I had spent the whole year prior to it working on it, and I feel proud of it. So I would love if people bought it, but you know, if not, that's fine too.
And where can they follow you online? Where can they read your work, your amazing new gig at Vox? Incredible, incredible pieces already there and upcoming. Tell us everything.
Thank you. Okay, so the best place to find me is my blog, which is justgoodshit.com. There's links to everything else there. Yeah, it's exactly what it sounds like.
iconic URL.
But so every week I publish a, like, here's everything I read this week. Here's the stuff that I wrote. So that's kind of my home base. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is the_REWM. But I'm realizing I post there less consistently than I do. Like my sometimes I like don't get around to tweeting my articles and things like that. So like blog is home base, but you can give me a follow on Instagram or Twitter as well if you want to.
Love that. And speaking of follows, follow my ass on Instagram at Dame Galley. I'm doing a giveaway with Milk and Don't Call Me Honey, one of my absolute favorite Etsy shops and content creators online. Giving away 5 of his pieces. Ooh. And P.S. did a Patreon episode breaking down the future of Real Housewives of New York. So nice. Join, enter that giveaway on Instagram. Ends this Wednesday. Listen to that episode on Patreon. Also, a new Patreon episode that talks about an understanding of the complicated idea behind discussing the Sex and the City reboot, as well as a live reaction watch to the just released New Jersey trailer, as well as some of your satchels of gold about Salt Lake City, Orange County, and actually, and just like that, the Sex and the City reboot. The Andy's Girls Patreon, the number one way to support the pod, patreon.com/Andy's Girls. $2 a month gets you my love and sass. $5 a month gets you 2 bonus episodes. $10 a month gets you 4 bonus episodes and invites to special sassy Zoom keys. And you can also join the premium tier, the people's Patreon couch, and record your very own Patreon episode with yours truly. That'd be me. And that's patreon.com/Andy's Girls. And guys, just a friendly reminder, the language of Andy's Girls, it's satchels of gold are your thoughts and feelings, reactions, questions and concerns to all things housewives and more. Slide into my DMs on Instagram. Let me know your first name in your town, or if you have a super long form mega essay, which I fucking love to get genuinely, andysgirlsshow@gmail.com. And listen, holidays coming up, Christmas around the corner. Thinking of everybody, sending everybody love. If you are with your family, chosen or otherwise, having a solo celebration this year in whatever way that word can be formed, I hope you are all finding those moments of happiness, togetherness, and in the words of Rachel Miller, showing up and being there for yourself, let alone your people. Whatever makes you feel good, that is safe as it can possibly be and healthy. I wish that for everyone listening. Get vaccinated, please, if you can. The booster is Santa's favorite present, if you have capacity to do so. And again, hope everyone is staying safe and sane, getting vaccinated, and we will talk to you soon. Merry Jewish, in the words of my people. We'll chat with you soon. Bye, guys. Bye.